In the late 1980s, I came out. Or perhaps I should say I began a process of coming out that was pretty explosive at first, not as explosive as yours, Stephen, and continues in much less dramatic form to today. I decided for a whole range of reasons, I think I was about 19 at the time, to, in the words of the Jimmy Somerville song, which ages me as well, that there was more to love than boy meets girl. I needed to tell others the truth of myself, the truth about myself, and the results were pretty mixed. Some friends were great, many were concerned. I was, after all, studying theology at university with a group of evangelical Christians. The news got round very quickly. There was a special Christian Union prayer meeting, evidently. I wasn't invited to that. And lots of people had to come and tell me what St. Paul did or didn't say in the book of Romans. So I caused something of a stir. This was nothing, however, to my mother's reaction. I knew I had to tell my mum. I also knew my mum's a bit of a snob. So I thought I'd take her out for a meal, thinking she wouldn't cause a scene in public. I was wrong. It's like the death scene from Madame Butterfly. She's better now, but back in 1987, it wasn't good. In coming out, I took a risk. I risked friendships, a future career. Back then, I still had this vocation to be a minister. And I risked my family. I had to tell others who I was because it seemed to me then to be dishonest not to. And in my arrogance at 19, I preferred to be hated for who I was than loved for who I wasn't. It was a very risky time. Years later, I find that I'm still involved in this coming out thing. Every time I meet someone for the first time, there comes a point when I sort of come out. I have more finesse than when I was 18, 19. I don't do the "my name is Andy and I'm gay" thing that I'm sure I used to do when I was much younger. People will ask about my work. "Oh, I've not heard of that church. What's that church about?" It sort of leads nicely into the conversation. Or they ask if I'm married or in a relationship. Now, thankfully, the reaction is much more matter of fact and much less risky than it was in the 1980s. In our gospel reading today, Jesus is also revealing the truth of himself to others and does so in a very public way. He's returned to his home village of Nazareth. He has some fame. He's been preaching all over the place. But this is the first sermon that Luke records in his gospel. It's the first public event in Luke's gospel after Jesus' baptism. So it's fitting that this sermon in his home synagogue is what Luke wants to say is important for Jesus and sets the scene for who Jesus was and what his public ministry was all about. If you like, it's Jesus' own declaration of truth about himself. And in telling the truth about himself, he tells the truth about God. And he does this by reading from Isaiah and through reflecting on this passage, which announces that the writer was anointed by the Lord to preach good news to the poor, freedom to prisoners, sight to the blind, and release to the oppressed, makes the startling claim that today, in their presence, this passage was fulfilled. He was claiming to be that anointed person by God. It was risky. In proclaiming the truth about himself, he proclaims the truth about God. And as the passage continues past today's reading, the congregation turn against him, take him to the edge of a cliff and are ready to throw him over. We don't know why, but they stop and Jesus manages to walk away. But he risks quite a strong reaction for telling the truth about himself. This shouldn't surprise us, really. People are killed all over the world for telling the truth about themselves when others can't bear that truth. The powers that be are still threatened by the truth when it is told. In Uganda and Iran and in so many other countries, there is the death penalty provided for those who tell the truth about their own sexuality. In many other countries, the mob wants to hit and to kill and to wound people, and the state stands idly by. The reaction of that crowd in the synagogue was horror as they grasped the truth about Jesus. Yet that truth includes more than they grasped. Yes, he claimed to be anointed by God, but he was also the kid they'd seen grow up. He was Mary and Joseph's child. He was a carpenter. He was a fellow Jew. But the truth of his mission trumped all the other truths. Again, this shouldn't surprise us. I realise now, some 26 years after I first came out, that the truth about me is much, much more than my sexuality. I'm a partner. I'm a Christian. I'm left-handed. I'm overweight. I'm a socialist. I'm a minister. I'm middle-aged. I'm an uncle. I'm a daddy to two dogs, one of whom seems to like getting in bed with me when I'm in the camper van, but that's a different issue. I'm a son. I'm a friend. And so much more. The truth is so much more complicated than the single statement, I'm gay. Some of the truth is more important to others. All of those truths describe parts of my identity. Over the last few months, I've done more funerals than ever before. When I go to speak to the family, I'm always interested in their memories and recollections of the person who's died. They're always personal, always moving, and always partial. If I'm fortunate, I can speak to a number of different people to give me a more holistic, a more well-rounded view of the person. I discover more of the truth of them. Jesus was so much more than the truth encapsulated in today's passage from Isaiah. But that passage is central to our understanding of who Jesus was and who God is. The key truth of Jesus, in whom God dwelt, was his mission. The first words St. Luke records Jesus saying in his adult ministry were about the poor, the oppressed, the blind, the prisoners. Jesus shows that God's concern is with the most lowly of his people, those whom society has forgotten about or despises. They're central to God's truth, to God's concerns. Of course, they aren't the entirety of the truth about God, but they are central. My sexuality isn't the entire truth about me, but it's a key truth. Perhaps minorities in any society are more defined by the thing that makes them a minority than would otherwise be the case. If our world was fair to the poor and the outsider, perhaps God's concerns would rest elsewhere. We know little of Jesus' upbringing. He was clearly taught his faith. He could read the Hebrew of the scrolls. He understood the Jewish Bible well. His mother, who herself sang for the poor, passed on her understanding of God's truth to him, a truth he espoused and proclaimed in today's reading. So I wonder, what is the truth about us? What's the truth about our church and our ministry? What's the truth that each of us hear? Can that truth be summed up in a few words or a few sentences, or is it much more complex? Some may define us as a gay church. Some may define us as a liberal church or part of an American church. Yet these things aren't the full truth about us, but they reflect something of that truth. We have a reputation for working with asylum seekers, but that isn't the entirety of the truth of us. We have a reputation for welcoming transgender folks, yet that isn't the entirety of our truth either. Just as Jesus' understanding was bound up in his understanding of God's mission, care and concern for our world, as shown in today's reading, so our understanding of who we are as a church is bound up with our understanding of the call God has given to us. And that call is the same as the call identified by Jesus in his first sermon in his home synagogue at Nazareth. God has anointed us and called us to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom to prisoners, especially those imprisoned by fear of themselves, to recover sight for the blind, especially those blind to the beauty of their God-given selves, and to release the oppressed. Our calling is bound up with Jesus' own calling, as we are his church, and as we are called to follow him. Amen.